Performance USA, the greatest entertainers in America, as requested by you, the men and women in the United States Armed Forces throughout the world. Command Performance, presented this week and every week, till you're home from the hospitals and back from over there. Hi, gang. This is Eddie King, hauling in another Command Performance. 30 minutes of top talented tunes, all as ordered in your letters to old Command, care of Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. And running the show tonight is a really grand guy. His list of hit pictures is a mile long, and so is the list of customers who've ordered us to grab him for old Command. So here he is on your own show, guys and gals, the star of that great picture, Let's Live a Little, Robert Cummings.
Thank you very much. Thanks a million. Well, hi, Ed. Hi, everybody.
Say, Bob, you did a great job of acting in Let's Live a Little.
Well, thank you kindly, but my acting days are about over, Ed, you know. Yes, sir, I have a... I'm the studio now is very anxious to make me a big producer.
Well, big producer, eh? Gee, that's wonderful, Bob.
Yeah, I got a telegram right here. It says, Dear Mr. Cummings, in your next picture, either produce or else.
Really peachy keen, Bob.
Oh, but enough about me. We've got a special command to take care of. It's a group that's become a tradition in show business. They're swell kids, very good friends of Command Performance, and their Decca records are tops wherever platters are sold. That's Judd, Ted, Marjorie, McMichael, and Clive Erard, doing business as the Merrimacks.
Thanks a lot, Bob, and hi, gang.
Well, it's good to see you, Judd. Boy, you kids are a welcome sight. Three grand guys and a gal.
Where is she?
Oh, yeah. Oh, say, a gorgeous gal. Come on, Margie, let's neck, huh?
All righty.
Hey, coming. What about Sam, Joe, and me?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're not my type. Okay, now, what have you kids cooked up for tonight?
Sure, and for all the Colleens and Collies at Station Hospital at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, we'll be after doing a little ditty we found during our pleasant stay in Old Ireland. We picked it up in Dublin, and quick took up the cry. We sing of Patsy Fagan, the decent Irish spy.
I'm working here in Glasgow, I've got a decent job. I'm carrying bricks and mortar, and my pay is 15 bob. I rise up in the morning, I get up with a lark. And as I'm walking down the street, I hear the girls remark, "Hello, Patsy Fagan," you can hear the girls all cry. "Hello, Patsy Fagan, you're the apple of me eye.
You're a decent boy from Ireland, there's no one can deny.
You're a verum, terum, devil may careum, decent Irish boy."
The day that I left Ireland was many years ago. I left my home in Dublin, where the pinks and pretties grow. And since I've left old Ireland, it's always been my plan to let the people see that I'm a decent Irish man.
Hello,
Patsy Fagan, you can hear the girls all cry.
Hello,
Patsy Fagan, you're the apple of me eye.
He's a decent boy from Ireland,
there's no one can deny.
You're a rarum, tarum, devil may careum, decent Irish boy, decent Irish boy.
Well, Mary Max, you're sensational. Don't run away now. Now, time to introduce our dramatic star of the evening. You've enjoyed her in pictures and on the air, and here she is to join us on the G.I.'s own show, the beautiful star of The Great Gatsby, the gal you all wish would get your hair muzzy, the ever-lovely Ruth Hussey, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
Thank you, and hello, everybody.
Well, well, we're glad to see you, Ruth. You're looking great. Say, I love that skin-tight skin you're wearing. Yeah, this thing must not be on. And you're just in time to help us answer some more mail.
Oh, what's the problem?
Well, Seaman First Class J.C.B., he didn't give us his name. He wants to know if the day of scarcities is over back here in the States.
Why, of course, Seaman. Things have certainly changed today. Salesmen are once again begging you to buy things.
For an illustration of just what we mean, we'd like to take you to a little cottage in the valley, the home of George and Gracie Sludge. As we look in on the happy couple, George has just settled down for a peaceful evening in front of a crackling copy of Forever Amber. As he sighs with contentment, his wife, Gracie, speaks.
Oh, darling, I forgot to tell you. The Guggenheimers called today and they want us to come over.
Oh, no, honey. Now, let's just stay home together in front of the fire, all alone, like on our honeymoon.
Oh, George, we were really close in those days.
Yeah, gee. You and I were just like that.
George, dear, you're holding up three fingers.
Yeah, I know. The one in the middle is your mother. Oh, Gracie, let's have a second honeymoon.
All right.
Oh, gosh, Gracie. Remember that after our wedding, we ran for the car and people threw rice at us?
And my mother tied an old pair of shoes to the back of the car.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. Well, why the shoes?
Oh, silly. That was in case you got fresh and I had to walk back. George, if we're not going over to the Guggenheimers, I'll just spend the evening washing dishes.
Gee, it's hard to imagine. 10 years ago, I made you sink into my arms.
Yeah, and the next day, you had my arms in the sink.
Well, honey, when I think of that wonderful honeymoon, I just want to stay home alone with you tonight and read. Hello.
How do you do? I represent the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner Company. Hoover Vacuum. The Hoover is the finest.
Oh, George, who was it at the door?
A salesman, dear. What were you saying, Bob?
Yeah, how do you do? I represent the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner Company. Makers of the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner. This is the finest
George, what should I wear to the Guggenheimers tonight?
How should I know? Wear whatever you want. Go ahead, Bob. What were you saying?
How do you do? I represent the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner Company. Makers of the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner. This is the finest vacuum made with many, many features.
You're not being very helpful, George.
Well, now, Gracie, how should I know what
you... Should I wear the brown dress that matches my hair or the blue one that matches my eyes?
Wear the green one that matches your complexion. That was pretty good, wasn't it, Bob?
How do you do? I represent... Makers of the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner. This is the finest
George!
Vacuum.
George!
What?
Oh,
snap yourself. I'm busy. Go ahead, Bob.
How do you do? I represent...
Now, wait a minute, Bob. Now, hold it. Now, what is this, your magnificent obsession?
Oh, no, sir. It's just that I learned this speech by heart, and the only way I can remember it is to say it clear through from the beginning.
Oh, look, that's no way to sell. The only way to do it is to tell your story in a few simple words that come straight from the heart. Now, can't you do that?
Why, yes, mister, I think so.
Well, then go ahead.
Well, this vacuum cleaner has a... well, the valve... Well, when your old vacuum starts rumbling, you can... how do you do? How do you do? I represent the vacuum cleaner company.
George, what is it you're so busy with that you can't snap my dress?
Oh, go away, will you? I'm talking. Go ahead, Bob.
How do you do? I represent...
I should go away, should I?
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
How do you do?
Yeah?
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
How do you do?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How do you do? Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Now,
wait a minute. Hold everything. Hold it. Going on here. Say, Bob, you're kind of confused, aren't you?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
Yes, you are. You don't need to memorize sales talk to sell a good product. Look at this sample, how it gleams in the light.
Say, that's mighty good looking.
Yeah, and think how it conserves the rugs in your house.
A point well worth remembering.
And the price is so reasonable.
By George, you know what? You sold me. I'll buy two of those.
Well, you'll never regret it. Now, here's your change, and good night, Mr. Salesman.
Yeah, good night.
How do you do?
a million, Ruth. Thanks also to Tom McKee, June Foray, and to Mr. How Do You Do. That, ladies and gentlemen, was Dick LeGrand, who's Mr. Peavy on the great Gildersleeve Show. And now, here's another great visitor, a star of nightclubs, radio, and many a command performance. Right now, he's breaking records at the Coconut Grove, and he's here to show you how he breaks those records. So, with a record in one hand and a hammer in the other, Denmark's gift to America, Victor Borgia, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, how do you do?
Well, that was very funny. As a matter of fact, you know, these inventions, I just happened to think, my grandfather, he was Danish. He was born in he was Danish after his mother, and Swedish after a friend of his father's. He was in he was born in Denmark when he was a little boy, and he invented, he was a chemist. He wanted to be an astronomer, but he was nearsighted, so he had to say something else. Yeah. I'm talking too much.
No. It's all right, Dick. Go ahead.
No, it isn't for my throat I'm thinking of.
Well, there's an audience. I didn't know.
They've been here all evening.
Yes. I heard them where you were on before. That was a wonderful spot. Now, see, my grandfather, he invented the first soft drink we had over there. He called it Four Up.
Oh, really? Four Up.
Yeah, but nobody liked it. So he went back to his laboratory and invented another soft drink, and he called it Five Up.
Five Up.
Yeah. Nobody liked it, except my grandmother, but he just hated her. So he went back and invented another soft drink and called it Six Up.
Six Up.
Yeah, but still nobody liked it. So he died 2 days later, heartbroken.
That's what I can understand.
But little did he know how close he came. I would like to play a little piece of music for you at this. Minuet in G. That isn't G. Wait a minute. G. I'm going to play a very short number because we haven't got much time. I'm going to play the Minute Waltz by Chopin. This happens to be the first piece of music I ever learned to play while my sister taught me the piano. She was my first teacher, and she taught me the Minute Waltz by Chopin as the first number I ever learned to play while she, as my teacher, taught me the piano. She's a brilliant pianist herself, has played all over the world. Piano, of course, and she's a brilliant pianist, and I'm sure you must have heard her name many times or seen it in print. I'm very fond of her, and I'm very honored to mention her name to you. Her name is... That's my only sister, just a minute. I've spoken to her so often. Doesn't make any difference. I recognize her when I see her. Minute Waltz by Chopin. Won't take long. She's only my half-sister.
Thank
haven't got time for it, but I'm going to play it anyhow. And I would like to play with the orchestra a little what we call Reader's Digest version of the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2. Mostly for the reason that we don't know number one so well. That wasn't it. Oh, yeah, the Steinway. The Steinway people asked me to tell you that this is a Baldwin piano.
Thank you very much, Victor Borgiou. And now, Ruth Hussey, you beautiful thing, you, come right on out here. Step right up. Hurry, hurry.
Yes, Bob?
Well, I understand that you've got a little something special for us tonight. What's it all about?
Well, Bob, I read a story the other day, a very short story with a wonderful ending. And that's why I was so pleased when I was asked to appear on command tonight, for this is the story.
is an ordinary day in the town of Wellesley, Massachusetts, and an ordinary summer's day with the sun shining brightly over the neat houses and the air filled with the joyous voices of children on the last day of school. A young girl walked down the street quietly answering the calls that came from every direction, a pile of books under her arm and a look of quiet determination on her face. In front of a large, pleasant white house shaded by tall elms, she turned, opened the gate, and started up the walk. An elderly couple sat on the porch in the cool of the late afternoon, and the woman greeted her.
Hello, Kathy.
Oh, you look awfully tired, dear. Sit down and pour yourself a glass of lemonade.
No, thank you, Mother. I'll just sit down here for a minute. Well, that's over for another 3 months.
Teaching getting you down, Kathy?
Oh, no, Dad. But I'm not sorry that vacation's here.
Well, now you have the whole summer just to rest and take it easy. Made any plans, dear?
Well, yes. Yes, I planned something just this afternoon. I've been asked to teach summer school out in Colorado Springs.
Kathy, more teaching during your vacation?
Oh, you're so tired and worn out. Can't you take this summer off completely?
Yes, I could, but... Well, this is different. I'm going to spend most of the vacation in just traveling. I only have to teach out there for 3 weeks. And I can see a lot of this country during the rest of the time. I want to... I want to discover America.
Oh, now, Kathy, you know that's impossible. Your father has his store to take care of, and I couldn't very well go gallivanting around the country with you and leave him here to shift for himself. Why, what would people think?
Well, I didn't mean for you two to go. I want to take this trip by myself, alone.
Kathy!
Go on, Kathy.
Oh, it'll be all right. Traveling facilities are very best now, and there are lots of fine hotels everywhere. Besides, I'm old enough to take care of myself. Things were different when you were a girl, Mother. But I belong to a different generation. This is a modern age we're living in. After all, this is 1893.
So Kathy bought her ticket, packed her bags, and listened to the many admonitions of her mother. She finally boarded the train at Wellesley Station and was off to discover America. In compliance with her mother's wishes, Kathy wrote long, descriptive letters telling of the wonders of her trip.
Dear Mother and Dad, I'm writing this as we're leaving Chicago. I wish with all my heart that you could have been with me to see the World's Fair. Oh, how can I describe the scientific wonders and the buildings, the people? It doesn't seem possible that just a few weeks ago I was talking of Shakespeare to a group of uncomfortable, restless students. When I arrived in Chicago, I first went to my hotel. The train windows now frame the beauties of Indiana. How the many little streams sparkle in the sunlight. Oh, this is indeed God's country. Until just a few days ago, I'd never seen a cornfield. Now that we've passed through Iowa, I've seen a field of corn so large that the thousands of stalks blend into a mass of yellow-green and disappear beyond the horizon. This morning when I awoke, the conductor told me that we were in Nebraska. As I write, it's been almost an hour since I saw a fence or any sign of habitation. Outside my window are only miles and miles of wheat fields. I can see the stalks weave and bend with the breeze. It's not hard to imagine that it's a great sea with wave after wave rolling past in swells the color of deep, rich amber. I'm very anxious to get into Colorado Springs and begin my work.
Well, Miss Bates, how do you compare Colorado Springs with what you expected?
Oh, it's wonderful. Just look at those mountains. To a girl from Massachusetts, they look almost forbidding, like, oh, sentinels on guard over the country.
Yeah, that highest one over there, that's Pike's Peak.
Yes, I know. The teachers at the college have chartered a wagon for tomorrow's trip up to the top. I can hardly wait to see the view. Oh, it must be marvelous. Dear Mother and Dad, Yesterday, I was literally sitting on top of the world. It was breathtakingly beautiful. In the moments atop Pike's Peak, it seemed as though I could see the whole of America in a sweeping panorama. In fact, I was so filled with emotion that when I returned to my room, I wrote a poem about it. Or perhaps someday I'll let you read it. I start my trip home next week and expect to arrive in Wellesley.
Kathy returned to Wellesley and resumed her duties as a teacher of English literature. The poem she had written lay forgotten in her notebook. It was not until 2 years later that she thought of it again. Her church wanted some material for its Independence Day edition in 1895. And to her immense surprise, after its publication, the poem gained much popularity. Americans all over the world liked it and wrote to her to tell her so. And then one day, 9 years later, Catherine received a letter, a very special letter.
And was much impressed by it. I have composed some music to go with your verse, and respectfully request your permission to publish it. I should be happy for an opportunity to discuss the matter with you at your convenience. Very truly yours, Samuel A. Ward.
And of course, Kathy gave her permission for the publication of that song. Today, those words that she wrote over 50 years ago have become one of the great hymns of this country, sung by Americans everywhere. The words written on a summer vacation that became the prelude to a song. That was beautiful. And many thanks to the Dick Davis Chorus for their marvelous choral effects. Well, gang, that does it for tonight. Thanks for asking us in. Keep those swell letters coming, and best of luck to yous all, wherever you may be. And good night, everybody.
Was arranged with the aid of the Hollywood Coordinating Committee. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.